So, how do we get from pond life to controlling the brain with light? To find out, we're joined now by Isabel Christie from University College London. She's going to guide us out of the darkness. Hello.
Hi.
Okay, we've seen these algae out of the pond, and there's this molecule, this protein, channel rhodopsin, and they have a gene for it. So then, how do you get that protein, get that gene into animals or other types of cells to do these studies? Tell me about what is optogenetics then? What are we doing?
Well, fortunately, we can use very clever genetics to take those genes from the pond life and put those into viruses. And then we can inject the viruses into the brain of a living animal, such as a mouse or a rat. And the cells that we've chosen to target using the virus will start to express that light-sensitive protein.
So I guess, like, in the same way when you catch a cold, a virus is delivering virus genes into you, making you go all snotty and all that kind of thing. You're actually taking these light-sensitive genes into the brain cells of the animal that you're working with.
Absolutely. Once the cells have become infected by the virus, they start to produce that viral DNA and they start to produce those proteins.
So the proteins are in these brain cells, and how do you make sure that it's just certain types of brain cells, or is it all any brain cells the virus infects?
Well, that's the really clever bit, the genetics angle, is that we can choose which cells in the brain we would like to express the light sensitive protein. And that's what gives this tool such great power, because we can choose excitatory cells or inhibitory cells in the brain, and we can target specifically which cells we'd like to make light sensitive.
So what's the benefit of making, say, a certain group of nerve cells, a little clump in the brain, you're making them sensitive to light by putting this molecule in them? So you shine a light on them, they go woo. What do you do then?
Well, it's all about control, basically. As neuroscientists, we want to understand the neural circuits of the brain. And one of the ways we can begin to understand them is to try and control them, turning them on or turning them off at will. One of the big challenges for neuroscience was this inability to control only specific brain cells at once. The more traditional techniques, using things like drugs, tend to affect many brain cells at once. So when you put a drug directly into the brain, it will spread out in the brain and it will affect all the cells in the region. The really clever thing about optogenetics is that if we make only some brain cells light sensitive, when we shine light into that part of the brain, only certain cells respond. And that gives us an ability to control the brain in a very specific way. So we can test hypotheses in a way that we just couldn't before with drugs.
So you can say, okay, if these cells go on, what's happening?
Exactly. And some of my research is about saying, if we turn these cells on, what happens in an MRI scanner? What happens in the animal's brains? Or if you were researching a particular disease where you've thought that some particular cells were responsible for causing that something to happen in the brain, you can turn those cells on and really test that hypothesis in a very direct way.
So we've got the genes, they're delivered into the nerve cells, they're making this light-sensitive protein, they're switching on. But how do you actually do that? How do you get light inside the brain? Last time I looked, the brain was quite dark inside.
Yeah, it's one of the awkward aspects, I guess, of optogenetics. So some of the first experiments that were ever done were done in a Petri dish with a slice of living brain tissue. And it was very easy. You could deliver light through your microscope objective or via an optic fibre. But most optogenetics these days is being done in living animals. So what we might do is, when we're doing the viral injections directly into the brain, we will implant an optic fibre into the brain. And then on the day of the experiment, you can come and connect an optic fibre externally to the animal's head.
So it's kind of like almost like plugging in a remote control.
It really is. If you look at images of optogenetics on the internet, you really will see freely behaving animals with optic fibres plugged into the back of their head. So it can look quite shocking when you see these images.
But presumably, you know, they're okay?
It's quite an invasive process, optogenetics. You're injecting viruses into the brain and then you're implanting optic fibres into the brain. But some of the great power of this research is that you can do experiments in awake, freely behaving animals. So people have designed very clever techniques of connecting the animal's head to the optic fibre so they can still move around their cage and explore and do sort of natural behaviours.
Why is this tool so powerful?
Being able to control the brain in a very sort of temporal, specific way. You can turn cells on exactly when you want to and not and off when you want to. There are so many hypotheses. I feel like almost every neuroscientist is trying to use optogenetics because it gives you a level of control that we just never had before.
And it feels like a very exciting new tool. And my specialism is in genetics and following CRISPR for gene editing and then following optogenetics for really precisely activating cells and switching on nerve cells. Does it feel like finally, we've got this tool.
I think it is one of the most powerful research tools that we've ever had in neuroscience. And I think it's already revealing so much about the brain. Just very cutting edge and very exciting times for neuroscience.
Do you reckon it's going to be a Nobel Prize winner?
Absolutely. I think it will be probably shared by Carl Dossereau and Ed Boyden and probably Giro Meisenbrock.
And like you say, so many different ideas to be tested out there.
I mean, it's just so wide ranging. It doesn't have to all be inside the brain. You can also look at the peripheral nerves, and you could look at other parts of the body. It's very powerful.
Turning everything on. Thank you very much. That's Isabel Christie from University College London.
And you might think that sounds a bit far-fetched, but actually we'll hear shortly how scientists are also trying to do this in humans.